Hey, everybody. Happy Halloween. It's Ben and Rob. We're your hosts from Rise.TV, bringing you the answers that will leave you on the edge of wonder. Well, like we said, it's almost Halloween. So that means too much candy, costumes with fake blood, and scary movies. But did you know that the stories from all those movies with vampires and werewolves have a much deeper history than anyone realized?
That's right. Real life dog boys, Ikemu, and other creatures of the night are still being spotted in this modern day. So join us tonight for a spooky Edge of Wonder Live.
Spooky.
Very spooky. You're about to hear the creepiest real Halloween stories that will definitely make your skin crawl. Plus a ghost story from Keanu Reeves, a real alien abduction caught on tape, and the inspiration for The Shining. So we'll see you guys out
on the edge. Well, and hey, if you're listening to the Edge of Wonder podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating and review to help us reach even more people. We'd really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Rob. Good. How are you?
Good. Yeah. I dressed like you for Halloween.
I noticed. That's pretty funny.
Oh, we've got a lot here tonight, huh?
We have a lot to talk about. I don't even know if we're gonna how much we're gonna get through everything, and we will. And man, we have a lot of Halloween stuff on Edge of Wonder TV as well.
Yeah, so we have something like almost 20 episodes or something like. Is that right, Lindsay?
I think we do.
Give or take.
Give or take about 20 episodes on Halloween type stuff. So
yeah, and that's not even including the live shows that we did because they're not even up anymore.
And that's not even including the episodes that I did on my own where I was just it was just me and not Ben, just the Rob channel. Yeah, that was scary enough.
Channel. All right. Oh, well, I mean, there's always the background of Halloween that we could get into, although we did kind of go into that in our Halloween episode.
Well, I think it's always good to review, right? How'd we get here? Because I have a little bit of stored information on that myself.
That's what I figured. And, you know, I figured you want to talk about, you know, your understanding of this too. I mean, I guess it all kind of started with the Celtics celebrating New Year's by honoring those who died. And we're talking like now, like, you know, 2000 years ago or so. So they actually believed that once a year, a door would open, basically connecting to our world to the nether world, and that the dead, along with other beings such as fairies and all kinds of things, would walk among the living. This would also bring evil spirits and entities in our world, and the story is that they would feast on humans. So in order to hide from these entities and these creatures and all kinds of things so they don't get eaten, people started dressing up as demons and monsters and ghosts and other creatures to pretend to be one of them, so that way they kind of blend in and not get eaten. So soon, you know, of course, bonfires became a big part of the celebration for, I said Celtics, I meant Celtics. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm thinking too much basketball here. Yeah, so and then they would leave like food and drink for the evil spirits, so to kind of please them, so again they're not feasting on humans. And then when they go back to the nether world, they're like feeling pretty good and everything's good, all good. So paganists would then practice something called Samhain, which was the same as the Celtic New Year, and that kind of combined. And, you know, gradually, you know, as the years go by or centuries, like other things kind of blend in together. Soon you have the Christian church taking over, and they kind of rename this as Hallowed Eve, which is what we now call Halloween. And it was a time for honoring the dead. And then, of course, there's also the Day of the Dead, which is a little bit different in Mexico, what they practice or what they celebrate. But, you know, and then each culture kind of has their own belief system revolved around this, but it didn't necessarily fall on the same time of the year. It's just that now it's just become more of a Hallmark holiday more than anything else.
And there's, you know, just like with any issue out there, there's different versions of history.
That's
versions of the history that led up to today, right? And so actually what I found was that mostly what was happening on All Hallows Eve or whatever, right? And I forget what it was called before that. It was it was Samhain or whatever, right?
Samhain.
Yeah,
it looks like Samhain,
S-A-M-H-I-A-N or whatever.
Yeah.
Samhain or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So basically what was happening was people would just go buck wild. It was basically in the past, it was like the purge minus the murder. So people just let loose a couple of days, you know, leading up to Halloween. They would start vandalizing things. They would be playing all kinds of insane practical jokes, throwing rocks at things. And it just was getting more and more violent every year. Like people just having a day to just unwind and do crazy crap. And it was affecting, you know, like London very seriously, like places in Europe, it was affecting very seriously. And so what ended up happening was, you know, it was like the Catholic Church at the time was trying to undo this pagan date, right? So they like you said, they ended up calling it like All Hallows Eve.
Yeah.
And then even I think the first or the second became All Saints Day even. So it was like that was the days leading up to that. They tried to basically Christianize that whole thing so that it would, you know, basically get rid of the history of people doing, you know, crazy vandalism and stuff on that day. And then what ended up happening was it wasn't working. Even in America, it started to spread here. Everybody was doing crazy things until the corporations decided to try to figure out a way to get people to start partying instead of vandalizing stuff. And so they started actually, it was like this big effort between the government and the corporations to, you know, make it into a party basically where everybody dressed up and did all of this stuff. They even created like different companies started to create costumes that you would wear so that people would start dressing up and stuff. And it was like they started selling those costumes and then it just blew up into what we have today, which is not exactly how I thought it went. Like I didn't really realize that it was mostly people letting loose and breaking the law and affecting people's property and stuff more than anything. You know, according to some historians, that's, you know, the best that we can do anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, from my understanding too, from a lot of the research that we've done, you know, all of these things start out good and pure with good intentions, but gradually weird things get thrown in the mix. You know, it's like, how did the Romans start doing human sacrifice, right? Like the same thing with a lot of the Native American Indians and Mayans, only certain groups. And, you know, and most of them that were sacrificing, they would take people from other tribes, like the really dark ones, and then sacrifice those people. And from what I've read, human sacrifice also became a part of, especially with the bonfires. Like at first it's all about food and celebration and life and death. And it's like, great. And then somewhere, somehow some evil thing gets thrown into the mix. And it's like, we need to start doing human sacrifice.
It's like, you know, some of the stories that I read over the last few days too, Ben, were like the moment that someone actually sacrifices something in front of the altar, they're cursed and become like a werewolf type thing. The moment they do that, like as soon as that happens, it's like over for them. Yeah, it's weird.
Wow.
And I mean, it's weird too, because that's how like the whole werewolf culture revolves around it being a curse or it being a deal with the devil. And it's like the devil gave somebody a salve. They rubbed it on themselves and turned into a werewolf, or they had some amulet and the amulet turned them into a werewolf, or they ate human flesh and were cursed and then turned into a werewolf. And there's different categories of werewolves too, that we'll get into a little bit later, which is really weird. There's like lupine, and there's lichen, and then there's the lycoens, and it's
interesting.
The loup garou was the werewolf in France, and then that name for that changed in Louisiana. It was called the rougarou,
yeah,
because that, you know, their French is a little bit different, but
yeah,
they're different types of werewolves too. Like there are some versions of the lichens mm-hmm. that apparently have more control over. They don't necessarily, like, some of them can turn whenever they want, but the other part of this whole lichen thing is, or lichen, whatever, is that they don't actually turn completely into a werewolf, but take on the features a little bit. Like, they grow teeth and they have the healing ability of a werewolf and the strength of a werewolf, but they still remain kind of have human characteristics. Mm. So they're like not full on werewolves. Like, it's not like the cursed type that just turn unnaturally as soon as the moon comes out or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And my brother has his own experience with the Rougarou when he was
in Louisiana.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I want to hear this.
Okay. Cause I mean, I've kind of shared this before, but
the Cajuns swear that the Rougarou is a thing, but
yeah, I mean, it's a crazy story. And, you know, he's kind of like, you know, he's not as open to things as I am. You know, he's way more cynical when it comes to
Ben,
a lot
who's
of this
as
stuff.
Open to things as you are.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah. But, you know, he still believes in, and, you know, well, he wants to believe, let me say that, you know, he's just more cynical when it comes to this stuff. But, it was when he got married and him and his fiance, and he loves going to weird back things. Like, he doesn't want to do tourist stuff. You know, they were like, let's go to like the parts of Louisiana where no one goes to, you know, no tourist goes to.
Don't go near the witch doctors that are going to turn into a zombie, dude.
Yeah. So
stay away from the zombie powder.
Yeah. So he's like, they were driving in these back roads and it was getting dark. And he was driving and all of a sudden he just sees this thing on the side of the road and it looks like it's eating an animal. And he was just like, whoa, what is that? And he's like pointing to his wife, like, this is weird. You know, what is this? And she's trying to get the phone out because they're like, this is strange. And then it looks at them and he says that there's like red eyes just staring at him. And then it stood up on its hind legs. And he said it was over 6 feet tall, like perfectly straight, staring at them. And then as they were like approaching it, it just like ran off really fast in the woods. And he's trying, like, you know, in his head, he's like trying to figure out what the heck he just saw. And they both saw it. So they're both kind of freaking out at this point. And he's like, that can't be this Rougarou thing that everyone's talking about. You know, there's no way. So they get to the town. And because it's a smaller town and not a tourist area,
everyone's talking about it. They'll talk to him about it.
Yes. They just start going in these shops and everyone's like, just like very nonchalantly. Oh yeah. You saw that. It's like, what? And they're like, dude, everyone in this town has almost seen it once. You know, and it's like, wow. And he was just like, and he called me right away and he's like, dude, this is crazy. You know, he's like, I never thought in a million years that I would see this. And then he had a friend that was kind of in a similar area and she didn't know that he saw it. And then she starts telling him like, dude, I saw this crazy thing. And she didn't know what it was. She's like, I had these red eyes and it was like about 6 feet tall. And my brother's like, dude, you saw the same thing I saw. So, yeah, it's just, you know, so it's crazy when you start like knowing people personally that have these personal stories, you know, seeing
so like, check this out,
Bigfoot or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. So in ancient medieval France, it was called the loup garou.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is weird because, you know, it kind of derived from ancient Greek, right? Apparently there was one of two things happening. Either one, it was such a nuisance that it was just disturbing. Like these things were disturbing tons of things in ancient France or whatever, or two, people were just really freaked out. And so they blamed everything on the loup garou. So anytime anything went wrong, like anytime you didn't have your homework and you went to school, you'd be like, the loup garou did it. Like that's how things were back then. So like they blamed everything on the Loop Guru. It was like crazy, apparently. So if somebody broke into your house, if somebody took something, if something disappeared, it was always the Loop Guru's fault. And so it kind of made it seem like it was ridiculous. But really, if we think about it, in ancient France, and you know, France is close to the UK, in the UK we had the Celtics over there. Over here, the Cajuns coming in, and you had all of the voodoo stuff that's going on, which to this day, like if you just start going down the rabbit hole of voodoo, and the Louisiana is one of the weirdest places in the United States when it comes to, you know, witchcraft and yeah, you know,
it really is.
Yeah, it's super weird. So it's like, you know, all of these places, like that, you know, it does make sense. Like if the like Celtic paganistic stuff is still in play there, and then it was brought over here and it's still being utilized, it does make sense that these creatures would be following that. But mind you, it's hard for me to take in and believe that the Salem witch trials killed 19 potential witches. Okay. 19. 80,000 people died in Europe of either being a werewolf or a witch. How is this like a mistake? 80,000? 80,000 is a lot of people for this to just be like some imagination of like crazy Christian people. I don't know. It just seems strange.
I agreed. And that's where a lot of these stories stem from, about the vampirism and werewolves, you know, especially back then, which we can really get into some of these stories, because I know you found a bunch on the werewolves. I found some stuff on vampires that we haven't talked about, because, you know, we do have 20 episodes related to these topics. And I was like, can I find something that we haven't mentioned yet? And I found something. And I was amazing. Like, wow. But,
well, okay. Yeah. So this is the vampire, right? The vampire thing? The
vampire story.
So, okay. Why don't we do this? Why don't we watch a trailer, and mm-hmm. then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about a vampire story that we've shockingly never told you before. All right, so we just mentioned the Salem witch trials, you guys. So with Halloween upon us, you're probably seeing a lot of kids in witch costumes, and schools are teaching about the Salem witch trials, or a version of that history. But did you know that there's an occult magic horror story that no one is talking about? Well, Ben and I did a two-part series where we looked at the hidden history of witches and the parts of the Salem hysteria that nobody has been talking about. So check out our trailer all about it.
In our last episode, we showed that there was more evidence of the Salem witch trials being connected to a deep state operation and having more truth than any of us previously realized. Not only did we discover connections to the occult, but it seems that the mass hysteria triggered by these events was also organized by one of the deep state families to achieve multiple objectives. So grab the popcorn, light some candles, and lock the door. Because in this episode, we're going to share five stories of real witches and magicians that show us how this history is far different and much scarier than anything Sabrina the Teenage Witch could ever conjure up. On this episode of The Edge of Wonder.
Wonder. Wonder. Wonder.
Oh, we are back. So you guys, you can find that along with 20 other episodes that we've done on these topics on Rise TV, and along with so much more that we've covered as well. So
definitely check that out. And if you're watching our show right now on podcast, if you're listening, thank you, Ben. Halloween's got me thinking crazy. Yeah, please give us a 5-star rating and review.
Thank you. We definitely appreciate it. All right. Okay. So why don't we get into this vampire story?
And you've got to tell me about this.
Present what you found with werewolves too. So there's this story that I found by Mercy Brown, and this may rival Count Dracula as one of the most notorious vampire stories, even though honestly, I don't think I ever came across this. So, Mercy was a real person. This can actually be, and there, in fact, they even found the tombstone of this and everything. And she lived in Rhode Island, believe it or not.
I knew I've heard this name before.
You might have heard of this. That's what I was thinking. I was like, I wouldn't be surprised.
This is a classic story we know of there for sure.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I figured people in Rhode Island probably know this. And she was the daughter of a farmer named George Brown. So George started losing his family members, and including Mercy, eventually in the late 1800s to tuberculosis. But at the time, they didn't really understand what was going on. And the community kind of came together to try to explain the deaths, because that's what they did. You know, especially if multiple people die in your family, it's a very surreal thing. It's like, oh my gosh, like there must be something else going on, something demonic or some kind of witchcraft or something like that. So it was common to blame at least one person in the family who maybe either died first or died last. This is actually her real tombstone in real life. So they basically searched each tombstone of all of his family members. And so his mother was also one of the ones. And basically when they opened everybody, everything was normal. The bones were there. Everything was normal. They were like, okay. But when they got to Mercy's tombstone and they opened it, it was, for one thing, it was winter. She only died 8 weeks earlier. So her body wasn't really fully decomposed because the cold was actually preserving it. But what was weird, she was on her side and she still had blood in her heart she still had her heart and blood in her veins. So they accused her of being a vampire.
So they speared her through the heart.
Well, they cut out her heart.
That's what you have to do. Yeah.
Burned it. And then her brother was sick. And they fed the ashes of the burned heart to her sick brother, thinking that this would cure him. A couple months later, he did die.
Of tuberculosis.
Yes. That's probably not a very good remedy if you're going to do it that way. But anyway, so it was really weird because the story just back then, I guess you could say, went viral. And everyone accused her of literally being a vampire. But the weird thing is that what her body literally was on the side. And that's the really bizarre part of the story. But
like she crawled back into the coffin and turned on her side.
So what they feared was that somehow she was able to get out of her coffin, out of her grave, and then was like murdering her other family and then would crawl back in the grave, you know, once she was finished. And that's like the whole story of, you know, the vampire aspect. And this became very famous. And then of course, like the whole ideology and, you know, revolved around vampires kind of started coming from this, and along with all the other stories and Vlad the Impaler and
Huns over there in Romania.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting because I guess there's more stories related to Rhode Island. And, of course, like, you know, the Salem witch trials wasn't too far from that whole area. So yeah,
just 100 miles away, basically. I don't know about that. But also in Rhode Island, like, you know, Rhode Island, actually, there's a lot of weird stuff that happened there. Edgar Allan Poe lived there. You walk by his house, where his house was in Providence. It's a creepy looking house. It still looks like Edgar Allan Poe lives there. And I think actually maybe the people that own it do that on purpose. I really don't know, but it's like you walk by it and you're like, yeah, he wrote here.
That's crazy.
H.P. Lovecraft lived in Rhode Island, you know, another weirdo. And then there have been stories in Newport. Like there's even a group that meets up in Newport every year. There were some strange UFO abductions or something that happened. And these people meet up every year about that. And then you've got all over Newport, we've got the big, big families that own mansions there, right? Like the big families, you know, like the Aluma Donkey families, they all owned at some point or had built huge mansions in Newport, Rhode Island. And they were all there. So obviously it's a very beautiful part of the country, you know, and they keep it kind of more secret because that's their like where they all live. But, you know, lots of weird stuff in Rhode Island.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like Illuminati stuff related there too.
Lots of stuff. Yeah.
Tons. Yeah. It's got an old history. So, yeah, it's pretty freaky. In fact, some of the other stories that I found were also centered around at least the area of Rhode Island. So, but Rob, so you found a bunch of stuff on werewolves, and I'm really curious to hear what you found.
Well, I mean, we talked about a bunch of it. We just talked about a bunch of stuff that.
You're talking about the.
Yeah, just like different things, you know, like I thought it was weird, like, you know, in Harry Potter, that I have to say, like, what's her name?
J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling, like, she did a lot of research because, you know, like the guy named Remus.
Yeah.
Remus Lupin.
Lupin. Yeah.
I mean, because like he was aware, but where the original story came from.
So weird.
So, Lindsay, why don't you click on this link under Lupin? It's strangehistory.net. So this here is interesting because there was a story. So there was one of the historians that came, I think, shortly after Herodotus was. I think his name was Pausanias or something like that. When she gets it up, we'll look at it. So this is the werewolf of Temesa. Okay, now, so it's Pausanias. That was his name. And he was a Greek historian, but they call him an antiquarian, which is a pretty cool name for a historian. So if you scroll down here, it's this story here about... see Odysseus. Now, basically, so here we'll just read this quote. So Odysseus, so they say, in his wanderings after the capture of Troy, was carried down by gales to various cities of Italy and Sicily, and among them he came with ships to Temesa in Magna Graecia, Italy. Here, one of his sailors got drunk and violated a maiden, for which offense he was stoned to death by the natives. Now, Odysseus, it is said, cared nothing about his loss and sailed away. But the ghost of the stoned man never ceased killing without distinction the people of Temesa, attacking both old and young until when the inhabitants had resolved to flee from Italy for good. The Pythian priestess forbade them to leave Temesa and ordered them to propitiate? The hero, setting him a sanctuary apart and building a temple and giving him every year as wife the fairest maiden in Temesa. That's creepy. Whoever this witch was bad news.
That is weird.
So they performed the commands of the god who, you know, was, I guess, you know, channeled through this woman, right? And and they suffered no more terrors from the ghost. But I guess... this guy named Euthymus happened to come to Temesa just at the time when the ghost was being propitiated, in the usual way. Learning what was going on, he had a strong desire to enter the temple, and not only to enter it, but also to look at the maiden who was there. When he saw her, first he felt pity and afterwards love. So the girl swore to marry him if he saved her. And so this guy with his armor on awaited the onslaught of the ghost. He won the fight, and the hero was driven out of the land and disappeared, sinking into the depth of the sea. So he had a distinguished wedding, and the inhabitants were freed from the ghost forever. Now, what's interesting is, if you scroll down in one version of this story, scroll down, Lindsay. Yep. So this is Pausanias actually talking about this. He said, "This I heard, and I also by chance saw by chance a picture dealing with the subject. It was a copy of an ancient picture. There were Stripling, Siberius, a river, Calabrus, and a spring, Lyca. Besides, there was also a hero shrine and the city of Temesa. And in the midst was the ghost that Euthymus cast out, horribly black in color and exceedingly dreadful in all his appearance. He had a wolf's skin thrown around him as a garment. The letters on the picture gave his name as Lycus, which is, you know, the lichen. So, like, all of these things that we've heard in history really came from a lot of these ancient Greek stories of werewolves. And apparently what they say is that in an earlier version of this story, this guy, I guess, became a werewolf, not necessarily a ghost, and was attacking the city because he was cursed. He was attacking people in the city. And it was him feasting on these maidens that was keeping him away from, you know, whatever, from killing just anyone randomly. So this is like a really old story, and kind of like some of the source of like werewolf lore actually comes from this time. Yeah.
Wow. That's really, really interesting. And like going back to like Remus. Yeah, I mean, I mean, the story is from Remus and Romulus myth about the wolves. And that's, again, where Harry, J.K. Rowling, you know, because you're right. It's really fascinating when you're really looking at some of these characters, like how much and even like some of the wording and just the storyline itself, like how much she's really did her research. And she was, you know, what's so weird, I didn't realize that Harry Potter actually takes place in the early 90s. So when you're like reading the books and everything, like he's actually born. Harry Potter's like born in 1980. And I didn't realize that until kind of recently. And I was like, dude, that's so weird. So it's like everything we're watching and seeing, it's like, it's weird. Cause then it was like, wow, it's like me kind of growing up then. It was like, that was like this, because we're like the same age technically, you know, it's just,
so what you're saying is you're Harry Potter.
I might be. No, really. But I was just, you know, it was really interesting. Just recently, I don't even know what I was looking at. She was talking about the inspiration for Harry Potter, and it came to her, at a young age. I think she was like sixth grade, and she already started getting this like idea.
Sixth grade, and I was reading J.R.R. Tolkien, and I decided to steal a lot and try to make a different book.
I mean, obviously there is a lot of reference from Lord of the Rings and Tolkien's book and stuff, but still, it is pretty interesting.
Decided to make a lamer story of Lord of the Rings. Yeah. With a
child.
Okay, so you remember the other day I was telling you about Zeus's account of King Lycoen, right?
Yeah.
So I have it here, if you want to pull it up, Lindsay. So this is kind of interesting because...
Can you click on it, Rob?
Yeah, when I find it. This right here. Yeah. So he basically... I just think this is interesting because it's from Zeus's account of what happened, and it gives you a different perspective on how warped human beings have made gods, god figures. Like, we don't know what Zeus was like in the past, or if he was righteous, or what it was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So here it is. It's a bad report about this age had reached our ears, like the Olympians, right? Hoping that this report was false, I went down from lofty Olympus, and though a god, I walked on earth in human guise. It would take a long time to relate how much evil I found everywhere. The report was not as bad as the truth. I traversed the mountains of Manalus, frightful with the hiding places of wild beasts and the pine forests of Chile, Lycaeus, and Cyllene. Here is the throne and the hostile palace of the Arcadian king. I went in at the time when the late shadows were drawing on the night. I gave signs that a god had arrived, and the people began to worship me. At first, Lycoen ridiculed the pious offerings. Soon he said, I'm going to find out by means of a guaranteed test whether this is a god or a mortal. The truth will not be in doubt. He prepared to kill me at night while I was heavy with unexpected sleep. He settled on this test of the truth, but he was not content with it. With a knife, he slit the throat of a hostage sent to the Molossian tribe and softened his limbs, though not yet fully dead, by boiling some of them and roasting others in the fire. As soon as he placed this meal on the table for me, I used my avenging thunderbolt to overturn the palace on its pennants. They were worthy of their master. Lycoan himself fled in terror. When he had come to the deserted reaches of the countryside, he howled and tried in vain to speak. As a result of his own nature, his appearance took on a kind of madness that he exercised against the flocks, the lust for slaughter to which he had become accustomed. He began to take pleasure in blood. His clothes became fur, and his arms turned into legs. Whoa. He became a wolf, but he kept vestiges of his former self. There was the same grayness and the same fury about his face. The same eyes shone in his head. He had the same appearance of fierceness. Isn't that weird? Like, this is like the craziest account I've heard. And it's like supposedly from Zeus himself.
That's crazy. Whoa.
Well, of course, it's Ovid that, I guess, but... Mm-hmm. It's unclear who this Ovid character was. Now, the weird thing, too, about Lycoan, Ben, Lycoan worshipped Hermes. He had a temple to Hermes, and he created a cult of, like, Hermes or Zeus or something. And he was, like, doing just insane things. And that's why Zeus went to visit, because he was like, who is this king, you know?
Mm.
Yes. But Hermes is always involved in this crap. Like, without without exception, Hermes is almost always involved in crazy crap.
That's true.
Where, like, super weird stuff is going on.
It's true. And actually, like, speaking of wolves and things like this, so there's a story, a true story, that I've found, about the dog boy, and I've never heard of this before.
Well, Ben, why don't we watch that right after this next trailer? We're about to do another trailer. So you guys, if you're liking this live show and want to hear more deep dives into the Halloween topic, Ben and I have done about 20 different Edge of Wonder episodes that get into really spooky, weird, and occult topics, from the true history of the real life of, you know, Dracula, Vlad the Impaler, to werewolves, dragons, the Jersey Devil, Mothman, and a lot more. So we have a pretty extensive catalog on Rise.tv. So please check out these trailers for a few of our spookiest series.
Want to hear something spooky? Why do the royals love Vlad the Impaler? What's so special about Transylvania? And why can't Queen Elizabeth eat garlic? What if tales of vampires didn't begin with Dracula? What if their origins go much, much deeper? To a secret order. The Order of the Dragon. How has this order lurked in the shadows? Did they fly away into the night? Or perhaps they've been hiding in plain sight for millennia? How are bloodlines, serial killers, and vampires tied to Vlad the Impaler? And what bone-chilling details could have to do with the end of the world? Join Edge of Wonder as we reveal all their secrets. For the Halloween series conclusion of Vlad the Impaler, only on edgeofwonder.tv. Blah.
It's a bird. It's a plane. It's... Mothman? Meet the mysterious gray cryptid, the size of a man with the wings of a bat and glowing red eyes. But is it real? There have been sightings since the 60s, or did it all start with the dying man's curse? Alternate dimensions. Sudden appearances before catastrophic events. Native American Wars, Chernobyl, and 9/11. Holy Wingspan, Mothman, the center of this creature's mystery is something beyond imagination. Join us as we look into one of the most fascinating cryptids that may be out there and ask, why do residents of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, swear that it haunts our skies to this very day? Tales of the Cryptids, Episode 3, Mothman. Only on edgeofwonder.tv.
Oh, snap.
Mothman. I was trying to find any, if there was new information or anything, new sightings that came out on the Mothman. You know, I couldn't find too much.
Since the like 60 sightings in 2017, they've been really quiet about what's
happening. They have, actually.
I think that wasn't supposed to happen, that leaked, that there were that many sightings of Mothman. And you know what? We all know now it was just Lori Lightfoot.
Boo. Speaking of that, I was just looking on Twitter during the break there, and Disclosure is trending on Twitter, and because all this UFO stuff is coming out,
or is it because Elon Musk is there now?
It's all the above, and Amazon, you know, Amazon stock crash, and I guess there was some insider information that came out that they were secretly giving money to this group, and anyway, it's crazy stuff, but
shocking.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Corporation doing something wrong.
Seriously,
that doesn't happen anymore.
No, not at all. All right, the dog boy though. This is really interesting. This has happened in Arkansas, and I guess I'm okay. So it's the urban legend of a werewolf, but it is a true story based on a boy that was born in 1954 named Gerald Bettis, I guess his name was. So there's these rumors held around the town that he was cruel and sadistic, and that he liked to capture stray animals and do twisted experiments on them. Sounds like somebody else born in Arkansas who I won't mention by name.
Wait, what did you say?
Sounds like somebody else in Arkansas. I won't mention my name, but he was a former president. So his cruelty only grew as he got older, and he was abusive to his aging.
Why are they calling Hillary a dog boy here, man?
So in 1981, his father was found dead in the family home, and his death was surrounded in mystery. So there was reports that actually came out that said that there was an illness, and many townspeople believed it was murder that killed his father. Bettis then kept his mother basically imprisoned in the home until adult protective services placed her in protective custody. His mother testified against him in court, and then he went to prison, and then he died in the 1980s. This is all a true story. So people say that his spirit still haunts the house where he grew up and where his father died. In many versions of the legend, his ghost walks on all fours and is shaggy like a dog, while in others, he appears as a towering man wearing a brown jacket and a brown tie. And then some people say that it's also kind of like this werewolf kind of being that roams the area as well. So, but yeah, it's really interesting because it is this true story, and I don't know, it almost kind of could be like this serial killer kind of thing, but, yeah. So death. This is a quote from somebody who claimed to see this entity, this spirit. When I pull up into the driveway of the house at night, I see a man looking at me. He is dressed in a brown jacket and a bow tie.
That's like really weird.
Time period.
That's creepy.
Super creepy.
That's from the window, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah, from the window.
I don't understand why more people don't. This is what bothers me. This is what bothers me about people that like don't believe in the paranormal or something. Like there's so much evidence. It's like
completely.
Yeah. Why is it so hard to believe that something that was here left an energy signature that you're like encountering over and over again, you know?
Yeah. And actually I found that case with a lot of these ghost stories that I was finding is a lot of it are from people that don't necessarily believe in these things and maybe even still don't believe, but you know, it's interesting because so many people I've talked to over the years, and especially after doing the show, have some kind of story. It's almost like they just are choosing not to believe in it because it's just easier for their mind to like deal with it. You know, it's like, well, if this is true, then it's just my mind. It then goes to all over, you know, all these different aspects of what could be happening. You know, am I in danger? All these things. If I just say, oh yeah, that was just in my head, it's just easier to write it off as just, okay, I'm not even going to put any more energy or thought into this and it's not real. And it was just in my head and I'm going to move on. And I think a lot of people just do that. But when you go to other cultures, especially Japan, it's totally different because it's just a natural thing that everyone believes in this stuff. And for some reason over here, it's this like taboo subject when you start to believe in it. But, so anyway, the different cultures really play another aspect to this too. So we could get into now what is the Ikimu, and we did cover this on one of our episodes, but if you want to, Rob, if you want to read this, you could read this if you want. What is the Ikimu? And this is a very ancient entity, I guess you could say, from Mesopotamia.
Actually, why don't you read that one? I'm having a hard time finding it in here.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and this was in our demons series.
Covering this, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we have so many episodes.
Oh, yeah, I just found it, actually.
You did. Okay, go ahead.
So yeah, so actually Ikimu means snatched away in Mesopotamia, and the Ikimu were a dreaded and feared entity that was an angry, bitter spirit banished to roam the earth. Unlike the vampire, the Ikimu don't drink blood, but they feed off of the life force of humans. These evil wind gusts, as they were sometimes known, could make the living do criminal things. Or if one showed up on a doorstep, it was rumored the inhabitants of the household would die. Legends persist about the Ikimu today, but mainly in rundown urban areas. So yeah, this is interesting because this is like ancient Assyria.
Yes, yes.
So the evil ghost of one who was denied entrance to the underworld and was doomed to wander the earth. Ikimu means that which is snatched away. Okay, so one becomes an Ikimu by dying a violent or unsavory death, such as by murder in battle, drowning, or succumbing to exposure in the desert, which left the corpse unburied. So the spirits of buried corpses also could...
Unburied.
Left the corpse unburied. So the spirits of buried corpses also could become an Ikimu under other conditions if the proper funeral rites were not observed at graveside.
Interesting.
The person died without surviving family or if the spirit had no one to care for it. Ikimu were greatly feared. It would attach itself quite easily to virtually any living person, regardless of whether that person had been acquainted with the dead one or not. So much as looking at an impure corpse could result in being haunted by the Ikimu. Huh. Once attached to the living, it was extremely difficult to exorcise. The Ikimu also appeared as death omen outside of houses, wailing in the same manner as the Irish Banshee. Wow, that's really weird.
You know, someone in the chat mentioned Dementors from Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of interesting because it does kind of sound like this.
Yeah, because it feeds on the life force of humans or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, like every culture has their own different entities, different legends, different stories, different were things. You know, it's like over here we just think of werewolves, but like you were talking about this the other day, Rob, in one of our live shows, where you could be like a were fox, were
were bears, were foxes, were jaguars, were lions. There's a lot of different were animals. Five star, you know, bipedal animals. That's... Yeah, and Lindsay, you know a bit about J.R.R. Tolkien. Where did she get that idea for the Dementors?
J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I think that she said in an interview one time that she had severe depression and she had a dream about Dementors. Or at the very least, that's how it made her feel to be so depressed, was exactly what the Dementors do.
Yeah, I didn't know that fact. I do know some facts with Harry Potter, but I didn't know that one. So that's really weird.
Actually. Up until like last year, I kind of felt like J.K. Rowling was a Dementor. And then she actually got her head screwed on pretty tight.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could say, like, I wasn't really quite sure where she stood with everything and, you know, kind of what side she was on with things. But I think now it's more, a little more clear, definitely. All right. So, man, now we have our top lists that we could get into right now. We don't have to say all of these. When we get on Rise TV, we have some really cool stuff, such as a real abduction, potential alien abduction caught on camera, and recently he was like some kind of an official for the UK. He commented on this, and we were going to get into that when we get on Rise TV. But, okay, let's see. Which one do we, because we can't read all of these, so I'm kind of thinking now.
You're talking about the headlines in red here?
Yeah.
Oh, I think we should go over to Rise TV and just start reading all those.
Well, there's 10 of them. So yeah. I have five on Rise TV, and then I was like five we could just start. We can just start going through it. Whatever we don't finish, we'll finish on Rise TV.
Sure, pick one.
Okay. Okay, let's do this. We're going to do the boy with no eyes because this one is pretty freaky. And these stories are real stories that I found on various different sites, Reddit, all kinds of things. So this is really interesting. This is from a woman who was posting this on Reddit. She says, one night when I was 10, I woke up in my bedroom door opening, followed by someone sitting on my bed. I felt my leg grazed and the bed sank under a person's weight. It's just my mom, I thought, and I opened my eyes. It was not my mom. I found an eyeless boy who had black empty sockets about my age sitting at the foot of my bed. He extended his hand and it was a little box. Oh, in it was a little box. I was startled but reached out. He pulled back. I reached again and said, give it. Then I blinked. And when I reopened my eyes, he was gone. But I could still see the imprint where he sat on my bed. Now, fast forward 5 years, my girlfriend came over to do some homework. After she finished, she took a nap while she waited for her parents. Then when they arrived, I tried waking her up. She opened her eyes suddenly, looking up at a corner where the wall met the ceiling. She pointed there and went back to sleep. I shook her again. She came full conscious and I explained what she'd done. She looked haunted. Up on the wall, I saw a little boy with no eyes. This is what she's saying. He was there in a Spider-Man pose staring at me. I freaked out and I told her my story about the same kid. Fast forward another 5 years. I was with the same. Okay, sorry. This is a male telling the story. I thought it was a woman at first. Fast forward another 5 years. I was with the same girlfriend, and we have a 2-year-old. We were living in my parents' home in my old room. My daughter started waking up at the same time every night, and she'd talk. After a while, I noticed that she almost she had almost the same conversation every night. I playfully asked her once whom she was talking to. She said, "It's a little boy. He's nice. He's lost his he's lost and looking for his mommy." My daughter's nightly conversation continued until we got to my place that later that year, our own place later that year.
Hmm.
I'm kind of curious though. It doesn't say whether the daughter was talking to the child that didn't have any eyes or not, but and nonetheless, it's kind of a creepy story.
Sure.
And go ahead, Rob, you want to choose
one? Yeah, before we go over to Rise, I think we should cover number 10 here, which is
go ahead.
Yeah, you guys, we've covered this before, but it's really relevant to Halloween, so we kind of wanted to just go over it. It's the plea for help from the Chinese labor camp worker who paid $1.61 per month, found stuffed in Oregon woman's Halloween decorations from Kmart. So Oregon mother Julie Keith expected to find styrofoam headstones in the graveyard kit she bought at Kmart for Halloween. What she didn't expect was a desperate plea for help from one of the Chinese laborers forced to make the holiday decorations in brutal conditions. The 42-year-old charity worker from Portland discovered the chilling hidden letter between two novelty headstones when she opened the kit in October. "Sir, if you occasionally buy this product, please kindly resend this letter to the World Human Rights Organization," the unsigned note that was folded into eights. So thousands of people here who are under the persecution of the Chinese Communist Party government will thank and remember you forever. The letter's author said the Halloween product was made in Masanja labor camp in Shenyang, China, where the laborers are forced to work for 15 hours a day without time off on holidays and weekends. Otherwise, they will suffer torment, beat, and face rude remarks, basically. So nearly no payment, they wrote in choppy English, accompanied by Chinese characters. The police said the workers at the labor camp made only 10 yuan per month, the equivalent of $1.61. So this was actually inspired from the movie we've had on Rise.TV called Letter from Mazanja. And it was probably one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. Like it was
me
it
too.
Was really, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just like kept you glued on the edge of the seat the whole time because you're watching it almost in real time as the movie is playing out. It's
very sad.
Oh God, it's sad, but it's just really powerful at the same time.
And we also have an interview with the director of that on Rise.TV, Leon Lee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very, very talented guy.
That is for sure. Yep. Well, yeah, we're coming up to the hour and there's still so much to talk about. So I think we can pretty much continue on where we left off on Rise TV.
Sounds good. Yeah, you guys. So we're about to leave Rumble and head over to Rise.TV where we're going to get deeper into this Halloween topic with the creepiest real Halloween stories we found that will legitimately make your skin crawl. The number one story tonight is really insane, so you're definitely not going to want to miss it. Plus, we'll go over a ghost story from Keanu Reeves and an alien abduction actually caught on tape. And the inspiration for The Shining. So join us on Rise.TV for just $9.99 a month and support our work. You'll get to ask us your questions during the live Q&A. And don't forget that your support lets us do these deep dives and bring you the truth that the censors just don't want you to hear.
Yeah. And if you're liking this Halloween topic, Rob and I did about 20 different episodes on creepy and occult topics. Like top curses in history, cannibalism, dragons, Cthulhu and the Kraken, and so much more. Werewolves, all kinds of vampires. So check those out. Check out these trailers for our Edge of Wonder series, and then join us on Rise TV, where we're going to keep on talking about what we're talking about.
What has hooves? A goat's head, bat wings, and a forked tail. It's the Jersey Devil. The mysterious cryptid
that haunts the forests and skies of New Jersey. But this beast has a story beyond legend. Locals actually claim to be descendants of the original Jersey Devil. What unexplainable things have happened that would convince anyone this creature is lurking in the shadows? Why were Ben Franklin and Teddy Roosevelt part of the story? What kind of devilish winged lizard beings are really hiding out in the cosmos? Are all claims of the Jersey Devil just a hoax? It's time to crack open the Edge Files and pull out one of our most classified cases yet. As we ask, is this flying fiend real? Find out all about it in Tales of the Cryptids, Episode 2, The Jersey Devil. Only on edgeofwonder.tv. You've heard about cursed objects. You've heard about cursed places. What if the stories were real? King Tut's tomb. Macbeth. The Omen. The Hope Diamond. Curses have fascinated us throughout time. But what if there's more to it? Some legends are just too crazy to ignore. Join Ben Solo as he uncovers the creepy and the weirdest top curses in history. Maybe omens and jinxes aren't so superstitious after all.
All right.